All right, we're still at Kapitel Yud Beis. Chapter 12. All right, so David had a vision early on in his Malchus of an era when the wicked would rise to power through the power of flattery and deceit. And they would overcome the poor and the oppressed. And many of the Forshim say that that vision then became the reality when Shaul was on the verge of subduing David. Because there was a time when it looked like Shaul was going to be able to vanquish David. And again, the vision came true 8 generations after Solomon with the famous story of Ataliah. We're not going to go into this. This is a little bit off of the topic of the life of David HaMelech, but Ataliah annihilated the entire royal line, except for Yoash, who they were able to hide away. And if you want to see more about that, it's in Malachim Beis, Parak Yud Aleph, chapter 11 of Malachim Beis. And Ataliah, that is the only time in the entire Tanakh we see the name Ataliah, and in fact you don't see the use of the name Ataliah very much, because she was a tremendous Rasha, and had they not been able to spirit away Yoash, hide him out, the entire line of David HaMelech would have been wiped out. So that again, that prophetic vision of a time when wicked people would be able to use the power of flattery and deceit came true in the times of Ataliah again. And David writes in here, he's going to write that in such a time when flattery and deceit are the tools of wicked men, honest men have no choice but to turn to Hashem. And there are, after the initial title verse, there are 8 additional verses, 4 verses of David HaMelech describing the wicked and how they achieve this, and 4 verses describing Hashem and his reaction to it. The first verse says, "Lamanatzeach al Hashminis Mizmor leDavid." For the conductor on the Shminis. Now, Shminis is from the word Shemaina, from 8, and it's an 8-stringed harp. Now, the harp in the Beis HaMikdash and the harp that David HaMelech played had how many strings on it? Say 7.
7!
Very good! Had 7 strings on it. However, the Medrash says that in the times of Mashiach, an additional string will be added to the harp, and the harp will be an 8-stringed harp. So therefore, when David uses Shminis, he's referring to, alluding to, amongst other things, the times of Mashiach, when perfect justice will occur, and there won't be the ability of men through flattery and deceit to achieve anything through those methods. That was okay. We're on Parak Yud Beis. Good timing. We were just starting, and this came from a prophetic vision that David HaMelech had of when a time when the wicked would be able to use flattery and deceit to overcome the poor and oppress them. And that we're talking about the fact that that vision came true twice, once when Shaul was on the verge of vanquishing David, and nobody among Shaul's retainers, I think is the right word, and court people, nobody would stand up and say, you know what, the truth is, David really doesn't deserve this. And also during the story of Ataliah, which took place many generations later, I think 8 generations after Shlomo HaMelech, when Ataliah wiped out the entire line of David HaMelech, except for Yoash, who were able to spirit away and hide. And David wrote this kapitel in response to this vision of the time when flattery and deceit will be able to overcome the poor and oppress them. The first verse says, "Lamanatzeach al Hashminis," for the conductor on the Shminis, and the harp in the Beis HaMikdash had 7 strings. David HaMelech played a 7-stringed harp, and the Shminis refers to an 8-stringed harp, which is generally meant to be the harp that will be played in the times of Mashiach, when an extra string will be added. So therefore, David HaMelech is saying that we'd like to play this on the Shminis, so we can have the perfect justice of the times of Mashiach, and flattery and deceit will not be able to work to oppress people. So after the first verse, there are 8 more verses, 4 about the Rishayim and 4 about Hashem and his response. So verse 2, Pasuk Beis, says, "Hoshia Hashem yigamar chasid, yifasu emuni mibnei adam. Shem Hashem, save us. For gone is the chasid, the pious person, and vanished are emunim, people of truth, from mankind." Now, the Malbim explains what's the difference between chassidim and emunim. A chassid, he said, is a person that goes beyond the call of duty. A chassid is a person who goes, leave name ashuras a din, above and beyond what's required. Whereas emunim, people of truth, are people that keep every detail of halacha scrupulously. And he says, you have to have one to have the other. If you have to have emunim, people that keep every detail of halacha scrupulously, in order for chassidim to exist, who can go beyond the call of duty. Otherwise, what happens, he said, is chassidim just become mocked and become taunted and mocked as extremists or fanatics because they seem to be going so far above what the law requires. Whereas when you have emunim, people who are keeping what the law requires, you can have chassidim that can go beyond what the law requires. So that's the difference in this pasuk between what a chassid and the emunim are. And he's saying, where are the truthful people? What happened to, why won't anybody stand up and tell Shaul HaMelech, you know, David really has no desire to kill. He's really a good guy. Instead, as we've talked about many times, Shaul's advisors just egged him on. So on the one level, David is saying, where are the truthful people? Where are the people who will stand up and say what the truth is? And on a deeper level, he's saying, without those truthful people, without emunim, people who are faithful to every detail of halacha, you can't really have chassidim, people who are willing to go beyond the halacha. Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch adds another explanation to this pasuk as to what a chassid is, and why David says there aren't any. He says a chassid is someone who does not withdraw from the world in his observance, but rather is very attentive and devoted to the needs of others around him. So not only is the chassid a person who personally is scrupulous, but he's, according to Hirsch, but he's dedicated to the people around him too. And David said, where are those people? Why are there no people anymore who, besides their own personal observance, are willing to extend themselves for the people around them? So a variety of ways of looking at David HaMelech's complaint is. A service assembled for the chassid is gone and the emunim have vanished from people. So on a simple level, where are the emunim? Where are the people who are willing to say the truth? Hey, Shaul, you know what? This is not a good plan. David is really not out to get you. David will be happy to wait until you die of a ripe old age, right? And then he can be mellow. Just relax. Here, have a fresco. Take it easy. Right? On a slightly deeper level, Hirsch is saying, well, you know what? The chassid is the person who expands his desire to help beyond just his own observance. He helps people around him, and he interacts with people around him and the needs of others around him. And David HaMelech is saying, where are those people? And finally, on the Malbim, is explaining the difference between not only the Chassidim are not there, but the Emunim are not there too. And he says, you have to have Emunim, people who just do all of the halachas faithfully, and maybe are not saving everybody around them, in order that you can have Chassidim. But you can't have people that go above the requirements of the law if you don't have people that just do the law itself. Mm-hmm. Any sense? Any questions?
Got it.
Pasuk Gimel. Shav yadabru ish esrehu. Falsehood they speak, each one to his neighbor. Okay, so let's say that pasuk again. So v'lev v'lev yadaberu. So with an insincere heart they speak. So Shav, as we said, Shav means untruth about Hashem. Like, I guess you would say like a theological untruth. Oh, you know, Hashem doesn't really care if you do that. That's a Shav.
We went the wrong way.
Thank you, people.
I was finally trying to find the bird. I was like, I can't find the bird.
But you know, when you get to... I'm still bar mitzvahing over here.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So, Yidaberu ish Yisraehu, and they speak each to their neighbor, this Shav. Right, well, you know what? It's okay. If we overcharge a little bit in the store, you know, Hashem doesn't really mind that much because we're going to give the money to Tzedakah. Mm-hmm. See, if we give it to Tzedakah, it's like people make deals. You know, if I win the lottery, I'll also give money to the yeshiva. Like it's just saying, oh, now I know how to support the yeshivas. Before Vinitsky offered to win the lottery, I don't know what I was going to do. But now, you know, so people make all, you know, so, well, you know what? Hashem won't mind if we overcharge a little bit because we're giving it to Tzedakah, right? It's a good cause. So, you know, go ahead and buy something from our students. That's Shav, right? Hashem won't really mind if we do that. They speak to each other. Sfas Chalakos, with a smooth talk. Right? The used car salesmen of their day. Valev, valev, yidaberu. And with an insincere heart, they speak to each other. That valev, valev, that double wording of lave, is meant to be sort of facetious. Valet, valet, with their heart they talk. Meaning not really with their heart, with insincerity they talk. Then Pasuk Dalet says, Yachres Hashem kol sisei chalakos. Hashem will cut off all the mouths of smooth talk. Lashem medaberes gedailus, and the tongues that speak boastfully, that's a good translation here, speak bigly, is what it really says, but speak boastfully. So the whole idea is that the people here who are being successful and appearing to be successful are doing it through their speech, through their deceitful and trickery speech. Right? But Hashem eventually will cut off their tongues. Why will they cut off the tongue and the mouth? Because it will make them an object of scorn. People who can't talk and who have a cut off tongue and mouth, that embarrassment that they cannot speak, right, will be their reward, quote unquote, or their punishment for having used their mouths in order to speak wicked things to begin with. Mm-hmm. Right, so they want to get in good with Shaul HaMelech. And let's remember too that even though David has been anointed and the Navi has said that David will be the Melech, it really doesn't look that great for David. Right? If you were the CNN commentator back in those days, and you had to you were announcing the war, you would say, well, you know, David has been on the run now for X amount of time, and Shaul's advisors are urging him to pursue him fiercely. And they've been shelling day and night, and you know, David hasn't been able to come out, and it would look pretty bad for David. And so therefore, people wanted to get in good with Shaul now. So they would say anything. Well, yeah, you know, you're right, David. David doesn't really, have a chance. And plus, you know, he's really trying to steal your malchus. And you know what? I'm not even sure he's Jewish. There's that whole ruse thing. Right? Over and over again to Shaul HaMelech. Right? So they're not physically doing anything. No one's taking their... These people aren't the ones taking their sword and pursuing David HaMelech. They pursue him with their mouth. Right? And they goad Shaul into doing these things. Asher Amru, those who have said, L'shoneinu nagvi, because of our tongues we will be strong, S'haseinu itanu, and our lips are with us, Mi adon lanu. Who is master over us? We can get anything we want. We're so smooth and we're so successful here and we talk like this. And look, everything's going great for us. We tell Shaul, he goes out, this is a great plan. Why go out and fight things for yourself when you can just trick people into doing what you want? Meshud Niyam, the plundering of the poor, May anakas of Yanim, Ata Akum Yomar Hashem. Now Hashem says, I will arise. Ashis b'yesha yafiyachlo, and will grant safety regarding him that he will speak. So now, five times in Sefer Tehillim, does David ask Hashem to arise by saying, Kum Hashem. And all five of those times, Hashem does not respond that he will do so. Only here, when the poor are being oppressed by the wicked, does Hashem say, Akum, I will arise. Before, when David HaMelech says there's injustice in the world, there's this problem, there's that problem, Kum Hashem. Hashem does not respond with saying, I will rise. Each time he tells David HaMelech that your Kum is not, is not going to be answered. But here, Akum Yomar Hashem, Hashem says, I will rise, because it's the poor that are being plundered. And when the poor are being plundered, Hashem is incensed, and he will arise. Imush Hashem Amaros Taharos. The words of Hashem are the words that are pure. Kesef Tsarif, like silver that's been purified. Ba'alu La'aretz, clear to the world. Mizukaf Shivasayim, refined sevenfold. Amaros Taharos, the words of Hashem are pure, which contrasts with the words of man earlier, which we said they were saying Shav. They were saying lies about Hashem to each other, but the words of Hashem are pure. And the Medrash says that Amaros Taharos are the words that are pure because they're so clear that everyone can see them. And this refers to the times of Mashiach. that Hashem's of words will be amoros taharos, words that are pure, and the refined sevenfold. And that refers to the Medrash that in the times of David HaMelech, the school children were so well versed in Torah that they could explain everything 49 ways why it was tahor and 49 ways why it was tummy. So if you ask them, is something tahor, is it pure, is it tummy, or is it impure, they give you 49 reasons why it was and 49 reasons why it wasn't. That even the children in that day were so well learned in Torah that Hashem is saying that because of that, I cannot tolerate this wickedness and deceit. David HaMelech wants him to do this on behalf of the children who are at this point innocent and have not been corrupted, who can explain everything 49 ways for Tamei and 49 ways for Tahara. Don't let them grow up into a world where these wicked people can use their power of speech to draw them away from their pure Torah. You see Hashem, that they're perfect and pure in their learning now. What will happen when they grow up? Will they succumb to these people with their shav and their false and their smooth talking words? And will they end up taking up arms against David HaMelech or whatever the situation is at the time that they grow up? Will they end up making the wrong choice because of smooth talking people?
Well,
don't let that happen, Hashem.
I mean, these advisors,
Doeg was the head of the Sanhedrin, and he was one of the primary people pushing Shaul against David. So yes, because he fell victim to each person has different reasons. Doeg is a whole story in himself, but yes, he got convinced that the right way was Shaul, even though they had this background of pure learning. And that's what David HaMelech was asking. Don't let that happen. That people who have the power of smooth talking and seem to have an answer for everything and a convincing reason for everything can even sway children who grew up learning that they could answer you mem test ways is tamei and one mem test ways is tahor. Even those children are susceptible to people that have a fast line and a smooth talking. If you came to those children and said, let's go bow down to some avodah zarah, so they would never be tempted by such a thing. Let's go to McDonald's. They wouldn't be tempted by such a thing. But give them a good reason. Well, you have to understand that, you know, Shaul, right, is really the real kid. And it's really, you know, not...
It doesn't sound like it was such a hard thing to fall for. All the,
That's why David HaMelech is asking Hashem to stop this. And it's not such a hard thing to fall for. It's much harder to make these pure children go and worship Avodah Zarah or go to eat a McDonald's or
even without
McCammon's.
Talk, per se, even just looking at who Shaul was. I mean, the big mistakes he made, but...
Right, so everybody knows Shaul, it was sure these children all learned what a big tzaddik Shaul was.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very easy. Very easy. All you need is to grease the wheel, so to speak, is smooth talk. And that's what David HaMelech is complaining about. That you wouldn't think that smooth talking and the ability to spin a good, convincing story would be enough to sway children who could show you 49 ways where anything is taller and 49 ways why anything is tummy. But David HaMelech was motivated to write this whole capital because it is. And he wants Hashem to do something about it, right? That this is intolerable. How can it be that these smooth talking people can lead astray such theoretically outstanding and upstanding individuals?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it correct.
It all seems we're seeing Samayim, but how do you know which one's the right one?
Right.
Correct. And that's
I mean,
and
we
then
always have a David in, you know, or writing this, you know, in our generation to show us, you know, and he was himself was like a salmon swimming upstream. He was way against the flow, and most people would have probably said he's crazy, you know, like as they
mm-hmm. They would have said, right, and we'll get to the next puzzle, right? This guy who used to be a shepherd
was he? And a shepherd was not like a high profession.
Right.
I mean, even though we look at it and say Hashem, you know, selected Moshe Rabbeinu, David, and one of the characteristics that made them a successful leader was their shepherdness experience, shepherding type. With the little sheepy guys,
right?
And that kind of tenderness, and that kind of and that kind of seeing how they interact and caring, caretaking for the weak and the unable to care for themselves. We look back at them and say that's a meter that made them a good leader. Right? But at the time, it didn't. It was not the Wall Street power broker of its day. Right? And being a shepherd, so here's this guy who's a shepherd out in the middle of nowhere, right? And he had this sort of red, ruddy, Esav Dikah complexion, and he's supposed to take over from Shaul or Tzadik? Wasn't that hard to convince people? A good story would convince people, and then those people would use that power more and more to oppress poor people. Now the power comes for themselves. Until the fact that they have their own power all from, they didn't go out, they weren't going out and killing people. They got the power all through smooth talking.
How were they? What exactly were they doing in oppressing the poor? They were taking extra money, or these bad advisors, these people.
In general, things like that. Yes, like they would. You would. Yes, so you would. By using this power of smooth talking, so to speak, you would end up getting power for yourself, and then that power you would use to tax and oppress the poor,
right?
David HaMelech is moved to write this by the situation in general, and by in specific the fact that his nevuah, his prophetic vision was when wicked people will be able to oppress people by the power of their speech. Now that came true. Besides, that came true many times, right? One of the key examples to David HaMelech is when nobody would speak the truth to Shaul HaMelech. However, the problem in general is that people would use their smooth talking abilities to gain power for themselves, and then they oppress people, and they tax people, and they take their properties, and they et cetera, et cetera. And that's what makes Hashem akum and rise up.
Right,
like the only thing left from the Beis Hamikdash is the Kosol Maravi, because it's the wall that the poor people built. When they made the Beis Hamikdash, you had to pay a tax. Right? People, when the next Beis Hamikdash, Beis Hashem, is rebuilt, it's not going to be free. Right? There'll probably be a big building campaign. And
the Temple Institute, you can buy
really?
Making with actual coins and a few bidders and find they in the Pushka, they have like a big piece of Pushka. Sometimes people will get those because they're actually getting money they're making all of the payment and everything. You can actually go and see the payment.
Well, when they made a tax and everyone had to pay the money, if you didn't have the money, you had to come and do the work. The money you were gave, it wasn't quite the kind of building campaign like we have now.
It was more like give or get, facetious. Right?
It was more like give or get. Yes. So you could send money, and then they would take that money and hire the workers.
Very good analogy.
And those workmen would then do the building. But if you couldn't send money to hire a worker, you went yourself.
Right.
And the Kodesh Maravi is the wall that was built by the people that came because they couldn't afford to send the workers. So
that was the dearest one
to Hashem. And that's Akum Hashem. Hashem will rise up when he sees the poor people are being oppressed.
Yeah.
Right, and that's why the Kosel Moravi is the only wall that, of all the walls that could have still been standing, why not the Kosel, why not, one of the other walls? Why the Moravi? Everything has a significance to it. Atasem Tishmarem. You Hashem will guard them. Tzreni min ador zulolam. Even from a generation such as this one forever. So wanting to guard these innocent school children, both literally and metaphorically referring to all the innocent people, from being swayed by evil speech. Saviv Rishoyim is halachun, and on every side the wicked walk. Karum zalus lifnei adam, when baselessness is exalted amongst men. David HaMelech here is concluding with something which almost seems to be a throwaway here, and that is wickedness on all sides is walking when baselessness is exalted amongst mankind. What he's really referring to a number of things here. Baselessness is exalted amongst men. David HaMelech rose from being a shepherd all the way up to being Melech Yisrael. You really don't go from a lower status to a higher status than that. And that aroused the ire and jealousy of many people. All of a sudden, like we were just talking about, all of a sudden this kid from the hinterlands shepherding around is supposed to be the next Melech, from Shaul HaMelech. Remember, Shaul HaMelech and Shmuel HaNavi had accomplished tremendous things. They united all the tribes of Israel. They conquered all of their enemies. Right? They reinstituted a central government. They reinstituted education. I mean, in the span of a relatively short time, they turned around 400 years of problems into a strong and united Klal Yisrael. And now, oh yeah, we're going to be actually away. The next king actually is going to be this guy we found out shepherding over there. So even though a more informed attitude would say, well, wait, he's also son of Yishai, and Shmuel and Avi anointed him. And, you know, if you were to actually look at the facts, right, if you were not CNN, let's say you were an objective news station, you would look at the facts and you would say, well, that makes perfect sense. But it's very easy to spin it into Shaul HaMelech, look what he did for us, and who is this little guy over here? And there's only one step from there to, you know, Shaul HaMelech, I've supported you so much. Can I be in charge of this little town over here? And so he's referring to that, and it's not really until Mashiach times that everybody, without dissension, will recognize David as the leader and legitimate king. There will always be David and Malchus saying somebody and that resents or is irked by the fact that this shepherd rose up to be a Melech Yisrael and to take over from Shaul HaMelech. And Shaul HaMelech, it's true, Shaul HaMelech did two avers. Right? And the big avera, of course, of not killing Agag, which resulted in him losing his Malchus. But if you were a person, you know, things look different when you look back at them through the prism of time. Think about people living in Mitzrayim, born as a slave and dying as a slave. They don't see the historical perspective, but there's this little tiny period of slavery followed by this great emancipation, and we get to Tyre, and Claudius was born. All they know is they were born, and they lived 25 years of utter slavery. So they don't. It's very hard for them to keep the whole picture in mind. We look back and say, what was wrong with those people? How could they not want to go out of Mitzrayim? How could they lose their emunah? My goodness, didn't they see they were getting to Tyre right over here? Right? So no, they didn't. Right, so when 4/5 of the people said, we're not going anywhere, they'd had the emunah beaten out of them and they couldn't see the big picture. So the same thing, if you're sitting in that time, right, you don't necessarily see the true picture unless you're really trying to. It's very easy to not look at the big picture and say, well, you know what? I'm talking about Shaul HaMelech again. It doesn't even make it. What I can't see that over here. I'm going with my man Shaul.
I don't know how to feel. It's all George Bush's fault. That's Muslims are attacking us. like
yes, always some sort of smooth talking answer. So David's tefillah is that Hashem should cut off the mouths of these people and that he should protect the young people who are so pure in their learning from the enticements of these, I don't know what you want to call them, fast talking, the people who would oppress people
spin
by
doctors.
Speech. Spin doctors. I think that's probably what we would call them. Nowadays. And one of the things that will happen in the times of Mashiach is people will be able to see everything clearly. In other words, there's no, and I think that we used, was it last week or week before, I used the example of the Talmud of the Ramban, who was very ill and was close to death, and the Ramban came and said, listen, when you get to Shemayim, I want you to ask three questions. There are three things I've never been able to quite resolve. And I want you to ask these three questions of Shemayim when you get there, and come back to me in a dream and let me know his answers, because I really, you know, these are three questions that have bothered me and I've never been able to really work it out. So, I want you, so the Talmud was Nifter, and sure enough, came back to him in a dream. And he starts telling him, he's in Gan Eden, it's wonderful, it's Gevaldik, on and on. He's like, this rules over here. Father Rabban says, new, what about the questions? He says, the questions? He says, yeah, the three questions I asked. He says, oh, I got here. And you know what I realized? They weren't really questions. So that's the same kind of thing. All the things that bother us, all right, is because we don't see things clearly. Mm-hmm. As soon as we see things clearly, so one of the things that the times of Mashiach will make is that we'll be able to see things clearly, and all those kind of questions and all those kinds of things and the ability to be influenced by people of deceit just sort of fall away. Now, the Vilna Gaon had in his siddur that this was the Shir Hayyad. So every day in davening, we say a Shir Hayyad. And that is the kapitel that the Levim used to say on that day. We say at the end of davening. So normally we have seven kapitelach that we say Sunday through Shabbos. On Shabbos we say Yom Shabbos Kaddish, and then we have all the kapitelach we say for each day. And in fact, if you wake up and you're really tired, you know it because you say the wrong day's kapitel, and you realize, wait a second, why am I? It's not really Tuesday. It's what? And every once in a while, you see a guy looking up like he can't quite remember what day it is. Right, and somebody will hopefully remind him that, yes, it's only 6:40 in the morning, but it's Tuesday, right? Because yesterday was Monday, and we'll give him a little reminder. So that's why, in fact, I used to joke in Yeshiva, that's why they read the Torah on Monday and Thursday, so somebody could figure out what day it was. Right? But that's not true.
Right.
That's not why we read the Torah on Monday and Thursday, but that does help a little bit. On Monday and Thursday, those were market days. And we don't want more than 3 days. The local Moshe Rabbeinu enacted that not more than 3 days should go by with reading Torah. So Monday and Thursday were the days that everybody came into the marketplace. So read Monday, Thursday, and Shabbat.
I thought there was some mystical,
Kabbalistic.
Yeah, actually what I mean is Monday rhymes with one day, which is the...
the gematria is...
The gematria of Monday. The English word Monday, which the gematria was invented...
way before.
So we haven't gotten yet, but we will get to, when we get to a kapitel that was set on a certain day, we'll discuss why it was set on that day.
Okay.
So for that, there are reasons.
Wait, so
Devin and Malachi
succeeded,
but
they shouldn't
do more than... Now, however, on Yontifs, on Yomim Tovim, there are often... Like, for example, the Vilna Gaon had for every yontif a certain kapitel to say on the specific yontif. As opposed to just saying, like, if yontif falls on Tuesday, the regular Tuesday kapitel, right? So he would have a certain kapitel for each of the Yomim Tovim, right? Which is not necessarily our Nusaf, right? But this is the kapitel that the Vilna Gaon had for Shmini Atzeres.
This one here?
Yes. Oh. Yud Beis is the kapitel that the Vilna Gaon had for Shmini Atzeres. And because of the fact that it longs for the justice in the times of Mashiach, when there'll be a perfect relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people, and we won't be able to be led astray, and we'll see everything clearly, therefore the Vilna Gaon held us was a perfect kapitel for Shmini Atzeres. And I think I actually explained this once on Sukkos when you were here, Mrs. Karen. So I was doubtful whether I should explain it again, because I'm sure you remember it perfectly clearly from many, many years ago. On Sukkos I explained, and I said, is that why the Vilna Gaon picked this kapitel? It was from the other direction. It was Sukkos. We weren't learning the kapitel. We were learning about Sukkos. So, but the Vilna Gaon picked this because of that relationship between the fact that when Mashiach comes and everything will be clear and there'll be perfect justice in the world, and that no poor person can be oppressed, etc. Right? Therefore, he felt this was Shmini Atzeres. Why Shmini Atzeres? The Shmini Atzeres is the ultimate... Well, they do say that. And that's an absolute excellent guess.
Okay. I'll take it. But not the one.
It's not exactly the one I was going to say. But we'll put that down as alternate.
Okay.
Alternate A. But it is, indeed, you're on the right track, because it's the ultimate day between Klal Yisrael and Hashem. Now, why is that? I mean, Rosh Hashanah is not the ultimate day. Yom Kippur, stand before Yom Kippur, and you could have, think of, I mean, we stand before Yom Kippur and we clap al chet, all the averas that we've done, and think of all the possible averas a person could do. They could be forgiven for them. What could be a closer day between Hashem and Klal Yisrael than Yom HaKippurin? Right? Shemini Atzeres. Right, closer than Shavuos, when we got the Torah. Closer than when, and Shemini Atzeres is like an extra yontif for the end of Sukkot. Closer than Pesach, when we got out of Mitzrayim. I mean, that would seem to be, it seems to be we're saying a lot to say that this day of closeness between Hashem and Klal Yisrael is exempt, and the times of Mashiach in perfect connection between Hashem and Klal Yisrael is exemplified on Shemini Atzeres. It seems like that's a big, it seems like the Vilna Gaon, by saying that in a sort of casual way, is making a pretty big statement, because we have some pretty big happenings on the other Yom Tovim. And what happened on Shemini Atzeres?
That's when there was a special time.
Correct. Nothing happened on Shemini Atzeres. On Sukkot, we're commemorating sitting in Sukkos.
Yeah.
And the Gemara argues whether it was Sukkos Mamish or whether it was the Anani HaKavod. And we say it was the Anani HaKavod, the clouds of glory. Right? But nonetheless, we sat in Sukkos. And that's why we, that's why it says in the Torah, you have to sit there, so you'll remember Hashem took you out and you sat in Sukkot. So we sit in our Sukkot, give out. But the Gemara also says that Goyim have to sit in a Sukkot.
Say what?
The nations of the world have to sit in their Sukkot.
They can't
and if they don't,
that was,
so well, we gave Korbanos for them.
For them.
So the Gemara says that Lasi Lovel, when come the day of judgment, the Goyim, the nations of the world, will be judged for not having sat in the Sukkah, which is not one of the Shiva mitzvahs during Noah. So what is the Gemara referring to? During Sukkahs, we bring korbanos for all the nations of the world. Why is that? Because why we don't bring korbanos for the nations of the world on Pesach or on Shavuos or any other yantif? It's because Sukkahs is a yantif that we have in common with the nations of the world. On Sukkahs, the idea is we go and sit in the Sukkah. Why? To show our complete trust and dependency upon Hashem. Well, how is that different for us than for the rest of the world? Is not the rest of the world also completely dependent on Hashem? Yes, say yes.
Yes.
Okay, good answer. So the rest of the, so they're supposed to also sit in a sukkah. Perhaps not literally. We'll get into the whole intricacies of the Gemara there. But in one way or another, they're supposed to show their trust in Hashem by sitting in their sukkah. And if they don't, they'll be held accountable. So we bring sacrifices for the other nations on sukkahs because we want them to also fulfill their sukkahs in addition to us fulfilling our sukkahs. So on Pesach, it's not shayach to bring korbanos for the nations of the world. They have nothing to do with coming out of Mitzrayim. On the contrary, they were not all in favor of it. All right, and Shavuos, we got the Torah. Why we wouldn't be bringing sacrifices for the other nations? Turned down the Torah. We could talk about what that means sometimes before some, but they turned down the Torah. So why would we bring sacrifices for that? But on Sukkot and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are special days for us, right? But on Sukkot, we're supposed to be doing Sukkot, and the Goyim are supposed to be doing their own Sukkot. Whatever that may mean. We have 2 minutes left, so we're not going to get too far into that. But they're supposed to be doing their own equivalent of sitting in the Sukkot. Then Shemini Atzeres comes, and it's sort of like when you have a house full of guests. But there's one guest that you really like the most. Right? Let's say it's Cousin Daryl.
Mm-hmm.
Cousin Daryl, right, is, you know, he's, oh, you grew up with him and he's the best. But you got Cousin Daryl, and you got all the aunts and uncles and grandparents and everybody there. And now finally after the bar mitzvah's over, everybody's packing out. And you're helping to put the suitcases in the car, and it's like, oh, I wish you could stay longer. And then you're setting them off on the way. But Daryl, he's so, you know, you call the bell, listen, Daryl, stick around for another couple days. Why don't you stay for tomorrow? And you know what? We'll go out and we'll do something together. It'll be a lot of fun. You stick around here with us. The bell says, okay, so everybody else leaves, and Daryl sticks around. Now you have nothing left to do. The mitzvah's over. You just enjoy each other's company. Because you love having a connection with Beryl. That's Shemini Atzeres. Sukkot is over. We've done our mitzvah. Now everybody's being sent packing. Whoa, Jews, stick around for another day. Great, what do you want to sit? I don't want to do anything. I just want you to sit and enjoy my company. The hardest yantif to do is Shmini Yetzeres, because there's nothing to do. You sit Shmini Yetzeres and you enjoy Hashem's company. That sounds easy, but it's very difficult. In sukkahs, you can go out, you can sit in the sukkah. Oh, I'm so cold, but I've still got here in my sukkah, doing all my mitzvahs over here, and I got a little of an esrog, and I'm shaking up a storm, and I'm doing all my mitzvahs. And on Pesach, I got all my matzah, and Shavuos, I stayed up all night, 37 years in a row, right? And, you know, I have what to do. All right, so on Shmini Yetzeres, as Hashem says, it's like saying, Beryl, stick around for another day, and we'll just hang out and enjoy each other's company. So if Beryl and you aren't really tuned into each other by 10 o'clock in the morning, that's the pits. All right, you're ready to send Beryl packing again. But what if you and Beryl really are tuned into each other? And you think the same way, and you enjoy each other's company, so the day will fly right by, and you'll wish Beryl could stay even longer. So the avoda of Shemini Yetzeres is to get into that in sync. I hate to use these terms, I don't know exactly, but in tune to just connecting with Hashem. And that just pure connection with Hashem that has no acts, that perfect clarity, is what David HaMelech is talking about when Mashiach comes. Mashiach comes and there's no false speech and there's no oppression because everybody sees everything perfectly. And they're perfectly in tune with Hashem, with each other. And that's why the Vilna Gaon said this is for Shmini Yetzeres. Because in Shmini Yetzeres, that's what we're doing. It's a very difficult avoda because there's not what to do. So you have to really be in tune with your guest or your host, in our case, in order to have the day be successful. And if the day is successful, at the end of Shmini Yetzeres, you don't want the day to end. Beryl has to leave. Oh, why does Beryl have to leave? So people at the end of Shmini Yetzeres are like, oh, boy, finally making Avdala. It's been such a long yuntif. Have missed El Pointo completely. Because Shmini, it's the end. But it's not such an easy thing to do,
no.
And that's why Chazal established Simchas Torah to be on Shmini Yetzeres. Because of all the times to finish the Torah, you can think of a lot of logical times to finish the Torah. I would have picked Shavuos if someone came to me and said, "I'm taking a poll, just off the top of your head, what do you think would be a good day to finish the Torah?" I'd have said, "Shavuos. We get the Torah. Can you imagine? We get the Torah. We stay up all night learning, and we start Bereishis over again. It's perfect." And Chazal said, "Boy, you've missed the point, idiot." Which is right. The point is that what's finishing the Torah is the ultimate in simcha. You finish the whole Torah and you're going to start again. All you're doing is being happy with Hashem. So what's a great day to be happy with Hashem? The day you get to hang out extra with Hashem, Shmini Yetzeres. That's why they established Simcha's Torah to be on Shmini Yetzeres. So here, since we have 2 days of Yom Tov, we're just thinking of Shmini Yetzeres and Simcha's Torah. It's really the same day. Right? And it was when there was only 1 day of Yom Tov, and in Eretz Yisrael, it's really the same day. So in Chutz La'aretz, we have that problem that a little bit, we think of it as a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really the same thing. It's 2 days of Shmini Yetzeres. But we can only do Simchas Torah on one of them. So we do it on the second day. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why, you know, we don't sit in the Sukkah on Shmini Yetzeres. I realize there are people that sit in the Sukkah on Shmini Yetzeres. The Gemara says that you don't sit in the Sukkah in Shmini Yetzeres. In fact, you're not allowed to sit in the Sukkah in Shmini Yetzeres because the Sukkah is for Sukkahs. And the reason that some people sit in the Sukkah is because of our 2 days and our doubt of the day. Is it really Shmini Yetzeres or is it really the last day of Sukkahs? So the Gemara brings three possibilities. You could sit, not sit, or sit without a bracha. So what we do is we often do sit without a bracha because it might really be through the Sveika Yom, it might really be the second day of the last day of Sukkot. Does that sound make sense?
Mm-hmm.
The second day of the seventh day of Sukkot is what it might really be. But real Shmini Yetzeres, you wouldn't sit in the Sukkot. You don't do anything. You hang out with the Shem. So the Vilna Gaon says, look, David HaMelech's tefil is all these people are being influenced, not by actions, by words. There's no actions here. They're being influenced by words, and he longs for the time of Mashiach when that influence is impossible to have because everybody sees things clearly. And that, the Vilna Gaon said, is Shmini Yetzeres. There's no actions. And the only way that you can really do Shmini Yetzeres properly is to get rid of all the bad words, so to speak, and to see things more clearly. Which, of course, we all hope will happen. Baruch Hashem.